Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 288 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. How are you doing today? I am really excited to have our guest coming on, but before we dive into that interview, I want to say thank you so much to Paragraph City Games for being a proud supporter of the show. You can check them out at ParagraphCityGames.com. One of the things that they do is provide the prize support for our monthly Patreon-exclusive giveaways, and the winner, actually, for the May giveaway is none other than Anthony Brown. Anthony, how you doing? Congratulations, buddy. Thank you so much for your support, and yeah, we're going to send you this cool Dominaria bundle provided by Paragraph City Games, and thank you so much again for being a supporter of the show. Anthony is actually also in our Dominaria Seal League, so he's an active member of the community, and it's just a pleasure interacting with him in the Facebook group, in the league, and of course, as a patron. So Anthony, thank you so much for your support. Of course, Prodigies, if you are interested in becoming a patron of the show and entering your name into our monthly drawings, then you can go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. You can see the different tiers that we have, and anybody in the Bed of Plants level or higher gets entered into the monthly drawings. And of course, there are other perks associated with the higher tiers, and then there are the goals that we're reaching. The first goal is making the show self-sustaining. We are almost there. With your support, we'll be able to keep the show going on indefinitely. As of right now, there are a few months left before I can make any kind of drastic decisions, but if we can meet that first goal that you see there on Patreon, then we'll be able to do one show a week indefinitely. So take a look at that, mtgpro2.com/Patreon if you're interested. And if you like the show and are gearing to go to the Pro Tour and find the tips and tricks that we share here useful, then I invite you to become a patron. Now, speaking of the Pro Tour, last episode, for those who have very sharp ears and heard, I said in the intro that there are no big events this weekend. And boy, was I wrong. I was looking at my Grand Prix calendar, and there were no Grand Prix last weekend, but of course, there was Pro Tour Dominaria. So congratulations to the competitor of the Pro Tour Dominaria. If you look at the top eight, there are a bunch of new faces, which is really cool. I'm excited to reach out to them and bring them on the show and ask how they got there and what they did and all that good stuff. So Pro Tour Dominaria was last weekend here in the States, and that was a lot of fun. And that was a lot of fun to see what's going on in Standard. So other than that, we don't have any big announcements. We had the Pro Tour last weekend, like I just said. A huge congratulations to Anthony Brown. And that pretty much covers it. So without further ado, let's bring in our guest. Sit down and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest has one old PTQ win, a handful of Grand Prix caches, and just made top eight of Grand Prix Birmingham 2018. Coming to us from Preston, England, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Luke Southworth. Luke, how are you doing today?
Hey, Sean. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
We are so happy that you're here. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take the game to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Luke, you can find him on Twitter. He's at Luke Southworth on Twitter. Pretty easy there. So just look him up, say thanks for being on the show, tweet at him, ask him questions. That is how you can find him. So pretty good stuff there. So Luke, before we do the Magic stuff, tell us about the non-Magic stuff. Are you working, going to school? What do you have going on? Is Magic all you do?
Sure. No, I'm just like everybody else, really. I'm sure I'm more like most of your listeners than most of the pros you have on. Like I work full time. I work in retail. Nothing exciting. I go to Grand Prix when I can, play Magic as much as I can, and yeah, just crack on with life itself and
love
play
it.
Magic, all the good bits.
And are you born and raised in Preston?
That's right. Yeah, I'm born and raised here. There's university here, but yeah, it's just it's a fairly small town. It's not far from Manchester. And, okay, yeah, it's where I've been all my life.
And what did you go to school for? Like, what did you study?
I studied IT at school, but I dropped out. It wasn't my thing.
All right, cool. Very cool. And let's see. So growing up, did you play a lot of games with your family? Do you have siblings, or did you play with your parents? Or tell us a little bit about that.
I guess my dad was like an old role player, so he got me into some of the old Dungeons and Dragons board games, things like that.
Yeah.
So I played some of them with him, played like video game RPGs, stuff like that, and then as I got a bit older, branched out into Pokemon cards, and I think that was a route into Magic for a lot of people.
Yeah.
In sort of that period of time. So yeah, playing Pokemon cards, finding that a game store existed, finding Magic there, finding Magic players there, and learned to play. That was about 2000. Yeah, just got into Magic from that point. Yeah, from sort of basically just a normal sort of video game background.
Fun. Yeah. And you mentioned not being too far from Manchester. Are you a Manchester United fan?
No, I'm a Preston North End fan. We have our own club.
Oh, cool.
There.
You have your own club. Cool.
So it's my cross to bear, as it were. We're in the second tier of English football, so we're not that bad these days.
Well, that's a lot of fun. And you mentioned kind of your introduction to Magic, so we would love to dive in and get some more details on that. So you started playing Pokemon cards, as you know many kids do, and then transitioned into Magic. How was that transition? What happened? Who introduced you to it? Tell us the story the first time you saw or played with Magic cards.
Sure. So yeah, found the game store that's selling Pokemon cards, and found that. Like, everyone at school sort of wanted to, you know, they bought the Magic cards, they traded the Magic cards, but nobody really played the game. The game seemed too complicated for them. So I sort of went looking, and I remember there was an old magazine called Top Deck Magazine, and that, when it came out in Britain, it was like a half and half, sort of like, half it was like Pokemon card coverage, part of it was Magic coverage, and there was like other sort of Wizard of the Coast card games in the middle. So I remember buying that because it came with a free pack of Pokemon cards, so that was sort of a big deal, and it's like, oh well, this costs only slightly more than the cost of the cards themselves, so why wouldn't you get it?
Right.
So I remember looking through that and being sort of kind of entranced by all these different card games, and it was just sort of like so many that I'd never really heard of before or never seen before.
Yeah.
I remember there was a WCW trading card game, one of the old wrestling ones, and I remember seeing Magic and, you know, finding it really interesting. And so when I got to the game store, when I found out the game store existed, I managed to sort of see people around playing Magic and kind of nosing in and seeing what was going on. And I ended up persuading either the store owner or one of the customers, I'm not sure, but somebody got me sort of this green-white deck full of commons, especially, yeah, just a bunch of stuff from the commons box, just something that I could play with. So
yeah
I learned it from there, and I was terrible, but it was fine. It was fun. And yeah, got to meeting people that play more and more cards, and really enjoyed it.
I love that. That's really neat. What was your first set?
So when I started playing, when I started getting cards, all of those cards were from Macedonian Masks block. Mm-hmm. Prophecy had come out, and Invasion was about to come out.
That is pretty fun. Macedonian Masks.
But yeah, it's a while back. So like way back at the turn of the millennium.
yeah, that's a lot of fun.
But yeah, it was really cool because I remember going back and reading the magazines again and seeing like all the stuff that I didn't really understand. So I read them for Pokemon stuff and then carried on. And then I went back and looked at them, looking all over these old cards and tournament coverage and things, and understanding what it all meant now. And I thought that was really, really neat.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. What's been your favorite set?
That's hard. I really enjoyed Apocalypse. I think that's got a lot of strong early memories for me because of the enemy color combinations were brand new to me there, and I thought there were some really powerful sort of combos. I think I might be in the first set I like drafted, maybe. I remember really enjoying that. More recently, I play a lot of limited, and I enjoy good limited sets. So I've really enjoyed the Modern Master sets for that. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Kanzatak here, doing sort of nonsense big things in limited, like going like 4 or 5 colors, and you know to do big powerful things in draft is always really fun.
That is fun. And what's one of your favorite cards?
One of my favorite cards, that's really, really difficult because there are lots of difficult cards. Electrolyze.
All right, so excellent. So for those of you who don't know, what is it, what does it do, and why do you like it?
It's 1 blue and a red for an instant, deals 2 damage divided among, well, either 2 damage divided as you wish between 1 or 2 targets, and draw a card. And it is just a really sweet value card. You can kill 2 things or like pop a thing off, deal damage to a player, and just get value out of it. You can flash it back to Snapcaster Mage for even more value. It's just, I don't know, I like green cards.
Yeah. You get to draw, so why not? Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's fun. So, you know, you started playing, you know, Magic with a pile of green-white commons and kind of...
It was green.
Yeah, yeah. I just kind of got into it and started learning. And, you know, eventually you started taking magic more seriously. So what was that transition like? When did you start being more competitive?
So I played a couple of PTQs during, like, my first sort of run with the game, like 2003, 2004. And I was still terrible at magic. I didn't really understand much in terms of strategy. And then my local game store closed. So I was out of the game for 2 years. Sat around, when was it? It was about Stars and Mirrodin. I came back, I think. And that's when I sort of, you know, had a more adult brain. I had more disposable income and I could work out how to do this stuff properly.
Right.
And I remember I started playing a bit more competitively there when I came back, started building, you know, decks, understanding the concepts a lot better. I remember going to the last of the old nationals qualifiers and didn't quite make it. I think I missed out on tiebreakers qualifying there, but it was like, that was enough for the taste. That was sort of like, all right, this is cool. I really like going to these competitive events and really pushing myself, testing myself, trying to be a better player, trying to beat people. And yeah, it was one of those things where it's just a case of getting into a position where I could like afford to, where I, you know, knew enough people I could borrow cards I needed, where I understood how to do these things a lot better. And that was sort of, and it wasn't one sort of individual sort of level up moment, as I say, but yeah, it was definitely like a gradual process of just understanding everything that little bit better and being able to go, all right, I understand the game. I watch people play the game at sort of a high level. I think that is a big, it's a big step forward for both me and for a lot of people, I guess.
Yeah.
Being able to sort of watch and understand other people that are playing a game on a higher level than you are. And I think that's, it's really hard to, you know, replicate that and really hard to beat that in terms of understanding how other people do better at magic than you do, why they do better at magic than you do, why they make better decisions than you do.
Yeah. So in that time frame, what was a challenge that you struggled with but that you eventually overcame?
Well, in general, just, I don't know, just being, I don't know, it's like at a very, very basic level, like understanding the concept of like the differences between like card advantage and board advantage and when to apply those differently. So I think I kind of understood that drawing cards is better, having more cards is better. And that's sort of one aspect of the game you learn fairly early on and you sort of, you internalize. But going from there and understanding that card advantage is only relevant if you're able to use all the cards in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's another sort of step forward that you take and you realize that, you know, knowing when you can afford to sacrifice card advantage for positional advantage and when that's relevant and important. And I think that can be hard for people to do, hard for people to sort of let go of card advantage once they realize how important card advantage is. But it's really important just to be able to get that pressure, get that, it's an off-use word, but get that tempo on the board and be able to close a game out rather than just try and gain more and more card advantage or try and preserve card advantage that you think you're going to have.
And if you can recall, what were some of the, I don't know, scenarios or times that was really highlighted for you that you were really able to kind of, you know, learn about board advantage and its importance versus card advantage? Like, I would love to dive into that topic more. It's really fascinating.
It's a difficult one. So I think the first time I qualified for the Pro Tour was in 2013, and that was with an old deck called the Aristocrats. It was like a Mardu deck, and it had a bunch of different sort of path to victory, as it were. It had sort of like aggressive, hasty flying creatures. It had like a go wide strategy, like a combo element. So it was, there was a lot of different ways to go with it. And understanding the role of what your cards did in any given match, but more importantly, understanding when you needed to just go all in to apply pressure because you weren't winning another way.
Yeah.
Was really important for that deck. And it's so knowing when to use Blasphemous Act, which is a sorcery that deals 13 damage to each creature.
Mm-hmm.
And that card could be used as a combo kill condition with Boros Reckoner. Three for three. When it takes damage, you can deal that damage to target player. So you blast from sack the board and deal, and if you have Boros Reckoner in play, you deal 13 to opponent. If you have two Boros Reckoners in play, it deals 26 to opponent. So it's got this combo in it. And knowing when to sort of go, I need to blast from sack early. I need to hold these blast from sacks till late, depending on what the opposing strategy is, depending on whether or not you're planning to win that way or a different way. It's very much matchup dependent. And I think knowing and understanding your position in that matchup or any given matchup is one of the big keys to sort of stepping forward and being able to win games of Magic that you wouldn't automatically win. Like if I go, oh, my opponent has a couple of mana dorks and a creature down, I could blast my exact here and I wouldn't lose much, like maybe a couple of tokens, but I get to be able to clear all this stuff up. And a lot of the time you think that's pretty good. But if you're going into a position where, you know, they have a lot of flyers and you're, you know, playing, you know, big flyers later on to get through isn't going to win, you have to know to hold those cards because you're planning to win by gumming the board up and then winning by combo kill rather than winning any other way.
Right. Man, I remember, I personally am woefully familiar with that combo because I went to an event. It was at some fair. It was just like randomly. It was like, oh, there's a Magic tournament at this state fair or whatever. And I borrowed a friend's standard deck. It was probably my first standard event ever. And yeah, sure enough, somebody pulled that on me. And I had no idea it existed one of those times, right? So it's just like, oh man. So he's playing. He plays Boros Reckoner. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm just doing my thing. He plays another one. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm just doing my thing. And then he does that and I die. And I'm like, oh. That's a thing. So that's one of the times I was blown out by a combo I didn't even know existed. And so it's, but now I know. So I know those two.
Yeah, sure. If it comes up modern, you've got it.
Oh man. Yeah. If it comes up modern, I got it. Okay. But you're right. So being able to navigate those situations, hey, I can get their mana dorks and shoot this off now. But if you know that they're going to have flyers later on that you can't deal with and got to hold it. And so obviously very situation dependent, but understanding the difference between, card advantage and Born Advantage and what's your path to victory in this given situation and then how can you utilize your resources to capitalize on that. So good lessons learned for sure. And recently, obviously, you have had a big finish making top 8 of a Grand Prix. That's fantastic. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. Very, very pleased, obviously.
Yeah. So diving into that a bit, we'd love to hear you know, just about the preparations leading up to it. How much were you playing? What were you playing? How did you decide what to play? All that good stuff.
So, yeah, it was a standard event, and I ended up playing red-black aggro or red-black vehicles. It's not really got a proper descriptor yet, but, yeah, it's an aggressive red-black deck with Heart of Kieran and Chandra and Karn at the top end, and it did a lot of sort of powerful things in the format. And it was a weird one. Because normally I try and go into my standard events with sort of a lot of preparation with a deck that I like the look of based on, you know, a meta game call or something like that. But this one, with it being so early in the standard format, there isn't a huge amount of data to go off. So people are still just going and throwing sort of powerful strategies at the board and seeing what sticks. So going to this one, there's a streamer called Matthew Folks. He's another English lad, and he streams a load of standard. He works tirelessly on it, and basically, if he's gonna put all that work into working on a deck, I'm going to keep an eye on it and make the most of him creating that data where it doesn't exist.
Yeah,
and I think that's really important to take what information you can, because that is the major, the most important thing you have in any form of preparation. So, getting whatever you can out of it is incredibly useful. I did testing online. I tested with a few different decks, but the red-black deck seemed powerful. It seemed capable. And to be honest, my testing wasn't that successful, but I worked on my list with a few people who were also on the deck. I found cards that I was happy with. I'm trying to find a way to beat the mirror match because I expected quite a lot of it to be around, and obviously managed to do okay with it in the end. I was very happy with CGN Commander off the sideboard. Was able to, as a card that could sort of allow you to deal with enemy planeswalkers quite well. And yeah, obviously the event in general went really well for me.
Yeah, for sure.
I certainly can't complain. It's a better finish than I've had in a GP before. And I think it's just one of those where if you keep plugging away at the GPs, eventually, you know, variants will swing your way. You've got to, if you like, stay positive, keep working hard, you will get there eventually. Because I think we've all been there where we've played events and we've all gone to the point of like, oh, well, if I didn't get mana screwed here, if I didn't flood out there, if I didn't hit this bad matchup here or whatever it was, you'd have had that next step in terms of the finish. And the margins are so tight at the top ends of these tournaments that you just need to get the right end of variants, and eventually, you know, that will come. That's the way of probability.
So you mentioned that this was a new, you know, it was so new format because the set just recently come out. So how did you, you know, make your sideboard or your tweaks, and, you know, tell us about that process, about specifically building or tuning a deck rather in a new format. What were some of the things that you're looking at? How did you know, you know, what to plan for, all that good stuff?
So, I mean, the best thing you can do is play and study Magic Online to a degree. That's where a lot of the people who will be playing in that sort of event will be testing the decks. That's where people will be getting their information from. And, like, while you can't account for every sort of rogue deck or every person, like, building a deck on their own, you can't ignore the fact that a large amount of people are just going to play whatever they see as the best performing decks on Magic Online. So you got people playing the big green decks with Galta. You've got people playing the green black constrictor decks. You've got the white black and the red black aggressive vehicles decks. You've got a couple of control decks with Teferi or Scarab God. And sort of you can go, all right, these are the decks that I'm aiming for. These are the decks that I know exist. How do I win those matchups? And you've got to make sure you have a plan for those matchups at the very least. Like, you want to be able to change stuff on the fly if you find something you're not aware of, but you have to at least understand what the threats are, because they're what you're most likely to be facing, and they're what you've got to have your ideas in the sideboard for, what you've got to have your plan for, and you've got to know, all right, what's my role in that matchup? How am I beating that? Can I beat that? If I can't beat that, can I make changes that will allow me to beat that? Fairly early on in testing, I was like, I can't beat the blue-white control decks with the build I have, so all right, well, I'm going to add some extra duresses to the deck because I think that's my best card in the matchup because of the information I need or help me dodge their removal since they've got a diverse suite of threats. And things like that are really important. You've got to know your game plan, and that's how you can make yourself aware of what your sideboard plan needs to be, what cards you need in there in general.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And, you know, obviously, it went well for you, like you said, and made it up to the top eight and headed off to a Pro Tour because of it. That's great. Which Pro Tour did you get the invite for?
So that'll be, I was going to say Pro Tour B8, but they've just announced the name for the set, haven't they? It's Return to Ravnica, or Guilds of Ravnica, that's the one. it'll be Pro Tour Guilds of Ravnica in Atlanta in November.
Excellent. Oh, nice. And have you ever been over to the States before?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times. I went to GP Vegas last year.
Oh, cool.
Which was incredible and very, very hot for a very, very white English person like myself. and I actually just came back from the States. I went over to New York for a trip and went to GP Hartford.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah, because I have a few friends in the area and I really wanted to see New York and, you know, thought why not take in GP Hartford while I was there.
Yeah, that's great. That's
cool.
Well, cool.
Yeah,
so, you know, made the top eight, qualified for Pro Tour, all good things. But obviously, you know, everyone's journey in Magic, yours included, is not all roses, not all ups all the time. So on your journey, you've had ups and downs, I'm sure. So tell us your worst Magic moment, and specifically, what did you learn from that experience?
I guess the most painful moment... ironically, it was just after that I'd qualified for the Pro Tour the first time. And just after that, I was playing with the same deck, and I was on a roll with it, feeling great. I ended up losing in the final of the WMCQ, the World Magic Cup qualifier. And that was a hard one to lose. I managed to, it was 1-1 going into game three, playing in the final of the World Magic Cup qualifier for Spartan Team England. And yeah, losing that to ironically my own combo. Because I was playing that
really? Restrict deck. I was going to say how that happened.
Yeah, my opponent was playing a Naya creatures and value deck. So it had Mana Dorks, had Huntmaster of the Fells, Restoration Angel, Boros Reckoners, and stuff like that. And my opponent ended up bringing in his own set of Blasphemous Acts, which struck me as really, really dangerous, but I didn't know about it. And he blows me out with this combo and kills me with my own combo and on camera to beat me in the final to get a spot on Team England. And that was painful. But I did learn from that. And I learned that you can't expect the unexpected is a turn of phrase that's used quite a lot. And it's very hard to do in a Magic context because you can only go off the information you know. But I definitely didn't expect that combo to be there post board for him. But I could have been. I could have thought about it and made allowances for it to be there. And I didn't, because I thought there's no way he does this. So I didn't think of it as a possibility. So I didn't hold up mana for a removal spell or represented one even. I ended up getting totally blown out by the combo and killed. And it's something you can learn from. You can put yourself in a position to not lose to whatever their out may be. And if their out is, they play this sweeper that you don't think they should have, you can still play around it. You can still, make an effort to try and beat it in the future or try and beat it because that's how they win. And yeah, that was a tough lesson to learn, but
I bet.
Hopefully it provides both me and your listeners some use in the future in that, just because you think they shouldn't have this card in after Cyborg doesn't mean they definitely don't. Like, be aware of it, and if you can play around it, do.
Okay. Yeah, because, conceptually, I totally grasp the concept and totally agree, but I can imagine that that's really hard. because in Magic, there's so many possibilities. I guess, it's narrowed down by the format of a standard or whatever. But, it's just expect the unexpected. It's like, oh, well, they could have anything. They could put some janky thing in there that you had no idea, right? So how do you play around that, So, I guess in this context, they're playing Boros Reckoner. They are playing Rhett, obviously. So it could be there feasibly. But, how do you expect the unexpected,
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Obviously, you can't play around every card in the format. That's kind of ridiculous. But if you've not seen it, it's obviously harder. But if you have context clues, you can at least put yourself in a position of, okay, well, they have Boros Reckoner in the deck, and they do go wide, so they can play this quite cheap, and they could potentially be on that. All right, well, and then you got to think about it. All right, well, is it a thing that I can beat?
Yeah.
Like, that's the first question. It's like, if you can't beat it at all, then all right, well, play as you were and hope they don't have it. But if you can beat it, then you got to look at the cost. Like, right. does playing around that mean holding up a removal spell? All right, well, what does holding up that removal spell cost me? Does it mean that I'm not going to be able to play out, my fourth creature? Well, how much is that going to matter on this board? And you've got to weigh up those costs individually for any given situation. And it's hard, but it's one of the things that you can, over time, it gets quicker, it gets easier, and it's one of those things that you do it almost subconsciously of going like, all right, well, the risk versus the reward is this versus this. Like, if the cost is low and the reward is potentially high, then obviously you do it. And it's trying to weigh that up on the fly. And it's not necessarily easy, but it's definitely something that you can do.
Yeah.
In some situations, you'll get it wrong. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's
true.
That's something that is going to happen. You'll make a call and it'll be wrong and you'll feel rubbish about it. And that's magic.
Yeah.
But you'll do it anyway. And at least you can put yourself in a position of going, all right, well, if I make the correct decisions, then I will win more often than I will do if I wasn't making those decisions. Even if you make the right decision and it doesn't work, or you make the wrong decision and it does work. Like, you need to be able to look back on those and go, all right, well, that was correct there, or that was wrong there. But 9 times out of 10, is that going to be right? Like, how many times out of 100 is that going to be right? And you can put yourself in a position to win more games of Magic by making the decision that's going to be better in the long term. And that's something you can always look back on and study about your own play. And that's how you make a lot of your improvements, is trying to either yourself or get somebody else to help you look it over if you need to. Mm-hmm. Just get people, like, study your own play and be able to establish whether you, like, did you play right? If not, why not? And can you, what can you learn from that situation? And that's why people get so much better with people that are better than them playing around them. Like, if you have someone to bounce those ideas off, to get those thoughts off, you can make considerable steps forward, because that helps you sort of visualize and contextualize exactly where you're going wrong and where you're going right.
And I love how you said, if you don't even know what's out there, then yeah, you're probably going to get, you know, you can't really plan around it because you don't even know about it, like what happened to me. And I think that's where being familiar, you know, with the format is really important, because then, like you said, when you've seen it, then hopefully you've logged that away and you know that it is a possibility. So when you are in a situation where maybe the stakes are high, at least you're more familiar with the combos or the cards that are out there, what, you know, you should be playing around as far as, oh, he's in these colors or she's in these colors, and, you know, it could be this card or whatever. And so that's, I feel that's really important, is being, you know, just staying in the game, being familiar, playing a lot, so you can just see, you know, a large amount of board states and things like that, to really know what you should be playing around. So I think that helps out a lot.
And then, yeah, absolutely.
No, you go ahead.
Sorry, yeah, absolutely. Getting the information ahead of time is the most important part of your preparation, and just being able to see what is out there, what are the threats and the answers in the formats, what do deck lists of this type often have in the sideboard. It's like if you're playing against a control deck, well, do they tend to play History of Benalia in the sideboard? Or do they tend to play Lyra Dawnbringer in the sideboard? Something like that. And it's like, while you can play with them in mind, you also want to know how likely is it? Like, and if I see 9 out of 10 of the blue white trolls in the format have a Lyra in the sideboard, then maybe I should keep some kill spells in there when I'm sideboarding. You know, like, getting information ahead of time is the most important thing you can do when you prepare.
And then you close up by, you know, mentioning, you know, playing with people who are better than you and asking them and really kind of getting their insights, so that you can look back on your games and see, hey, you know, was it right or wrong, and did it end up with a good result or whatnot? How do you find those better players and make those connections so that you have that network of people that you can rely on when you're trying to improve?
It's not always easy. I mean, you play, like, I always played at my local game store, and I sort of played to the point where I was sort of on the level with people who were, like, with the better players in my area, in my game store. And it's like, and I think for most people, that's as much as they can do, is that you get to the position of being, you can play up to the level of the people around you. Getting beyond that is trickier. Like, the more paper tournaments you play, the more people you meet, the more sort of, you can ask for advice, like, you know, if you've met players, and, like, most of them will be happy to chat with you if they know you. Like, so if you have a board state on Magic Online, then, you know, print screen it, send it to somebody better than you and go, look, I was in this situation. I made this play. I don't think it was right. What would you have done? Mm-hmm. And get them to go through their mindset about it. Like, they say, all right, well, what was the board say? What have we seen previously? And they'll probably ask you questions that you hadn't thought of before. Like, oh, well, I had seen this, or I had seen this answer earlier. Maybe I should have gone with this route. And even if you come to the conclusion that you're right and they're wrong, like, sometimes you will be, but getting other people's vision of a situation can just help you expand your mind for being able to analyze that situation better or more completely in the future. And, like, aside from that, like, one of the best ways of doing that, or getting other people's knowledge of how they play the game or how they understand situations is watching Magic streams of people better than you. Mm-hmm. That's part of how I stepped up. Is like in 2013 or so, I would watch Magic streams every night. I would be watching, like, especially the decks that I was going to play for events. I'd find someone streaming it. I'd watch them. I'd question their plays. I'd make the plays in my head and say, would I have done this differently? Why have they done it this way? If they've done something differently, ask them why. Like, most of them are happy to talk about the subject. Like, they're all Magic players. They all want to have those conversations for the most part. And, like, if you're respectful and friendly and, you know, yeah, try and have those conversations. A lot of people will be happy to discuss their lines with you, and that will make a ton of difference in helping you understand the plays that they make more deeply. Like, you can watch passively or you can watch actively. And if you're sort of fully engaged with it and going through those thought processes, you'll gain a lot more from those situations.
Yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. Good stuff. And I love the, you know, watching streams, taking screenshots of your online games, and sending it to people. And I like the point that you made. People, they'll ask you questions they might not have thought about. And that's really where I feel there's a lot of growth opportunities, because you go, oh, wow, I never thought of that. And then hopefully in the future, you think of those questions yourself. And then, you know, you show somebody, they ask you different questions you didn't think about. And as you keep going through that, then you start, you know, logging away the questions that the good players ask to analyze a board state, and then asking those yourself as you're going through. And the more you do that, the more second nature it becomes. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. So that was a great in context, I guess. That was a great low point and a great lesson learned. So coming back up, what has been your proudest Magic moment?
Making the Pro Tour for the first time was pretty overwhelming. Yeah. That was winning the Ultra PTQ, and just that was me being able to say, look, you know, it's validation for the work you put in, and winning sort of like, at the time it was like, you know, just winning a 200 player event or whatever, and that, and it feels huge, and it just, yeah, validation's a tough word to use, because I don't think you should put your sort of personal pride necessarily in your performances at Magic. Mm. Like, it's a game with such variance that it's not the most healthy thing to do, but it's, you know, it's still reasonable to be proud of your accomplishments.
Yeah.
Just don't necessarily put all your self-worth in it, if you know what I mean. But yeah, like being able to make the Pro Tour, being able to step out, you know, in that environment and going like, you know, I've won my flights, I've got my invite, I'm playing with the best players in the world. You know, that it feels good. It feels like, you know, I'm, you know, you've certainly, you know, made a real step forward in your Magic playing in a game of, you know, great difficulty, great skill. And it's a place that, you know, not everybody gets to go. Like, I'm sure a lot of your viewers or listeners, sorry, are in that boat of going like, I'd love to get there. And I was like that for years. And, you know, I've been like that for nearly 5 years since. It's really difficult to achieve. So, you know, when you do get that success, enjoy it. Like, it's, you know, it's something worth having, you know, having some pride in and being able to go, yeah, I've done this, I've worked hard, and I've, you know, earned a reward out of it.
Yeah.
And qualifying for Pro Tour is definitely that. Like, cool. My first loss on the Pro Tour came to John Finkel, and that was sort of like, it's almost mind blowing being able to play against these people that you consider legends, you know? Like, I guess for a lot of Americans, like being able to play again, like seeing all the sort of like, high level pros based in America is sort of a regular thing on the GP circuit. Like, a lot of the time you'll see your Seth Manfields or your Owen Turnbulls or Reed Dukes around at Grand Prix, because, you know, it's America. Why wouldn't they? But coming from Europe, like, we got a lot of the European pros, but you very rarely see the American pros. So that was sort of the first taste of, you know, holy shit, I'm sorry. holy cow, I'm there. It's like, you know, seeing all these sort of high-level American pros at the events that they wouldn't, like, you wouldn't see them at, you know, Grand Prix London or Grand Prix, you know, Paris or wherever it may be. Like, and it's a real taste of, you know, cool, I get to play against the best in the world and just see how I stack up. It's a really cool feeling.
Man, yeah, that would be really neat. That's cool. And so as you've been on this journey and you've, you know, played Magic all over the world, What has been the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I think getting too emotionally invested is the biggest sort of mistake you can make, because it's more of a life thing, and it coincides with the point I was saying earlier that you can't tie your self-worth into Magic, and it's a mistake that I used to make, and I've been trying for a long time to get myself out of that. It is that you've got to sort of, you know, be aware of the fact that Magic is such a variance-based game that you can't be in that, and when you do tie yourself into it, then those losses to Mana Screw or to Mistlers, whatever, they hurt so much more. And when you're emotionally tied in like that, it's not healthy for you. It makes you play worse in future. Just nothing good comes from it. You need to be in a position where you can sort of, you know, step back from it, take a breather, and be able to go, you know, like, this is going to happen. I'm playing a game with a large element of randomness to it.
Yeah.
You need to be in a position where you can not be overly impacted by that, because, well, for one, you'll enjoy yourself a whole lot more. Honestly, the best part of the Grand Prix Birmingham weekend was the fact that I was in really good spirits all weekend, and that probably contributed somewhat to me winning matches. Like, I was having a good time because a friend of mine, Gary Campbell, won the Legacy Grand Prix on the Saturday. I don't know if you've seen the social media about that, but it was an incredible scene. He's sort of a big deal in the Scottish Magic community and a friend of mine. So celebrating with him was fantastic. Just being, you know, generally nice, seeing friends, and just enjoying the experience and being a happier person will take a lot of that pressure off you. Like, when you go to a Grand Prix, you're probably not going to make a profit. No, like, very, very few people do. And so take the pressure off yourself. Basically, treat the events like they're a vacation, like they're a holiday. And make sure you're enjoying them. And the Magic itself will have less pressure on it.
Yeah.
And it will have less pressure on you to justify yourself being there. Because, like, I grew up pretty poor. And I understand the sort of, when you feel like, you know, your money's riding on it, and when you feel like, you know, you can't, when it feels like you can't afford to lose, whether or not it's true, you feel like, you know, you're setting fire to money, or, you know, like, this means you're not making money from the weekend. This means you're running a massive loss at the weekend. And it feels like you're just kicking yourself so much. And you need to be able to take a step back from that and treat the events like they are a break. Like, you're out there playing a game. You're playing for fun. You're surrounded by like-minded people. You probably got friends around. It's probably, like, it should be a good time. Enjoy the atmosphere. Enjoy the people. Enjoy the conversations. Don't let it be a burden. Don't let it be work, because it's not work for you. Like, there are a handful of people out there that are professional Magic players that it is work for, but I'm assuming the majority of your listeners, that's not going to be true. It's certainly not true for me.
Yeah.
And you've got to make sure you treat it like that, because otherwise the pressure is more than you should be bearing.
Man, really good. Really good stuff. And you could tell that over the years, and we've seen from talking to you, that you've put a lot into the game, and you've dedicated a lot to, you know, a lot of time and energy, stuff like that. And I think that dedication is really key. It's one of the things that I feel really sets Magic players apart, and it manifests itself not only in Magic, but in other areas of our life as well. You know, the dedication that the loyalty that we have to, you know, to this hobby, right? Because like you said, for the vast majority of people, it's not a career or anything like that. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Magic has definitely helped, like, my critical thinking skills in general, like being able to, like, think steps ahead, think strategically and whatnot. I guess it's one of those skill sets that comes hand in hand with wanting to play the game in the first place. But I was never one of these people that was like, I was a great chess player, or I was a great, you know, player of other strategic games before I got into Magic. I'm definitely someone who learned a lot of those skills through Magic. And I think being able to take those skills and you realize that they have, you know, real life applications, like being able to think strategically under pressure is a hugely desirable skill in the real world. And it's one that Magic players develop really, really well. And, you know, we're as good as anyone in the world at doing that. Like, Magic players and poker players, both of them sort of go and develop this ability to think like 2, 3, 4, 5 moves ahead whilst keeping sort of blank faced or while keeping sort of a casual demeanor. And they are able to sort of apply that and think well. And it's not something that you will necessarily develop in the rest of the world, in the rest of society, in the rest of the things you do. And it's something that you can sort of be proud of and enjoy and apply that in situations. Like, yeah, you can put that on your resume and that is a thing that is, you know, notable. I guess the other thing is that, being able to socialize better with random strangers is often a thing that comes up through playing in a lot of magic events like this. You get more casual in talking about magic, and that just lends itself to then getting more comfortable and casual talking to people in general about everything.
Yeah.
Because like a lot of magic players are, you know, have some amount of social anxiety or aren't the greatest, aren't the greatest socially anyway. Like it's a fairly nerdy niche hobby, and it does draw that type of person. And I was definitely someone who was, you know, pretty geeky growing up. And, you know, it's definitely helped me develop in that regard as well. Like sort of playing this game for sort of, I don't know what, coming up to 20 years now. It's something ridiculous like that. It's definitely made me a much more outgoing and sociable person. I think that's a really understated aspect of playing Magic at every single level. It's just meeting people you don't know, getting to know people, and being a better, a more empathic person is a great, great thing that Magic is able to provide.
Excellent. Yeah, that's good. That's really good. And how many pro points do you have this season?
This season, I believe I have 7, so I'm not bronze, unfortunately.
But, I mean, will you be able to make it to bronze?
No, I think my next GP will be GP Turin at the end of July, but I'm pretty sure the season flicked over by then. So,
oh, man, close.
Well, it's fine. Like, as I say, like, bronze gives me an RPTQ invite. So I've got the RPTQ coming up for the team. RPTQ, I've got a team sort of for that, so hopefully I'll do well there. But aside from that, I don't need to play the RPTQ after that because I'm already qualified. So we'll see how it goes. And then with it flicking over to the new, the sort of rolling seasonal system, we'll see how that goes. Obviously, picking up 4 points for a GP top 8 is a great start for that. So at any time I have 10 points over the previous 12 months, that would give me bronze status for there. So with having a pro tour.
I was going to say, tell us more about that rolling season, just so that we understand it better.
Well, it's a bit of a pain. I'm not sure anybody properly understands it yet. But, but yeah, it goes off sort of the previous 4 pro tour seasons. I think that they're all sort of like about 3 months based around the set and the pro tour. And they give you sort of your best up to 3 GP finishes in that season and the pro tour in that season. And you sort of get your points from there. And for every one of those seasons, and the previous 4 make up your current sort of total number of pro points for the current season. So if I've got 4 pro points for my last 4 seasons, then I'd be on 16 and I'd be bronze for this season, meaning I get the RPQ invite from this season. Or if I've got 5 of them all, I guess like I'd have silver and that would get me a pro tour invite.
There you go. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that, how that shakes things up and how it pans out and what how that impacts players for sure.
Yeah, I think there's a few people on the sort of higher end of the pro spectrum that are a bit awkward about it because people won't know what pro level they are until that period rolls around.
Yeah.
Or until very close to that period, till they've got their correct number of pro points sorted. So they won't necessarily know what pro level they are, so they'll have to arrange or not arrange sort of holiday days or travel or accommodation for events like Pro Tour because they don't know if they'll be qualified for it, things like that.
Yeah, that is weird. Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see, right?
Absolutely.
Give Wizards a chance. We'll see how it goes. And they're really good at listening to feedback and changing things. So if it sucks, then they'll probably put it back. So good stuff, man.
We'll see how it goes.
And then you already mentioned a couple of the events we have coming up. That's great. We love watching past guests go off and do great things. So good luck to the, you know, good luck when you go to those for sure.
Thank you.
And as we kind of turn the corner here and wrap things up, I want to remind the Prodigies, you want to connect with Luke, you find him on Twitter at Luke Southworth on Twitter. So look him up there. And then Luke, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you'd love to leave with us here at the end.
Have fun, be nice. So all you gotta know. Have fun and be nice.
Love it. And Luke, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. And thank you so much for sharing your stories and for taking the time to share your experiences with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers. It's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be banner-screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a ton of fun. I hope your listeners and the planeswalkers out there get something from it. Feel free to hit me up with any questions. I'll probably respond.
Episode 288 in the bag. Luke, thank you so much for coming on and being our guest today. Prodigies, of course, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Luke Southworth. And other than that, a huge congratulations to Anthony Brown, the Patreon who won the giveaway for the month of May. We'll be sending a Dominaria bundle your way, Anthony. Thank you so much for your support. Prodigies, if you are on the path to the Pro Tour and you like what you hear and want to support the show, check out mtgpro2.com/Patreon and feel free to support the show directly. Anybody who is at the Bed of Plants level or higher will be considered for our monthly drawings. I say we because the giveaway is provided by Paragon City Games. Check them out at paragoncitygames.com. So thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. So glad to connect with you today. I look forward to doing it again real soon. And until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.